sorry about this knocking about. I just had one, thanks. Yeah, I had two falls yesterday within about 20 minutes of each other. And I didn't wear shorts today because each knee was injured in my ankle and such like. So, and it's interesting, we finished up by going to a place at Sefton Park where Joanna works called Hospital Avoidance Clinic. And so we got the same treatment without having to go to hospital, but we had to be referred. But initially, when Dan asked me about preaching today, all I could think about was what the theme has been, Arise and Build, because it was a bit before that weekend that he spoke to me. And so when you look up that text, you realise it's just one paragraph. It didn't seem a lot to me to preach a whole sermon on, particularly since it's so clear. It says that we should build our house on firm foundations. So then you need to look at the bits that precede it. Where does it fit in the text? And in point of fact, it comes at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, which it's Matthew 5, 6 and 7. And that's why the first part of the Sermon on the Mount was what was read by Rachel this morning for the Bible reading. And it's known as the Beatitudes. And Jesus was giving situations that challenged the values of the day, really. He sort of turns them around. And as the reading began, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him and he began to teach them. Now I've got to switch this on first. Yep, I think it's right. Now we'll see if we get anything. Yes. In the first part, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. And I thought, what's the modern day equivalent or the opposite? Now, I'm not sure what's going to come up first here. Yep, I'll go back one. And I thought, as against blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom, it's very fashionable to be a show-off or an influencer these days. They like to be admired by others and, you know, really promote themselves. Promoting ourselves appears to be wonderful in our own eyes, and it goes against the grain of what we know about our Christian faith and how we should behave. And then to counter, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. I've thought, well, the opposite is really, let the sad and lonely and grieving look after themselves. I prefer not to get involved. I have my own life needs to think about. And that can very often be the way of the world. People will be pretty good about their friends, but a lot of people get left to mourn and grieve by themselves, and we know we try to keep a sensitive eye and ear out for those. Then we come to blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. The assertive and overconfident may appear to be controlling our world, but at what cost to us individuals and communities? Because that's sort of the opposite of meekness. And I remember at one stage I had a wonderful teacher in my school, and she was just on a contract and really wanted her to be permanent. She was a very quiet, humble sort of person. And you know that when she goes into interviews, that the overconfident, and you get a lot of overconfident teachers, I might say, and overconfident other people who think they're wonderful and they know that they know how to sell themselves. Sometimes they're not any good in the classroom. This girl is wonderful in the classroom, but not good at selling themselves. And I find that an irritation of modern society, that we have to sell ourselves rather than our worth be shown. And blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Life is about pleasure seeking, some people think. Self-made happiness, wealth and fame, without thought of right living and altruism. What could be better than self-fulfillment? And we know for a lot of people, young people, and we do judge them a little bit, but a lot of young people think that what they want out of money and their life and their income is all these adventure sports, how many countries they've been to and all this sort of stuff. And you really do wonder whether any of these people have more substance to their life apart from pleasure seeking. And I was even surprised in today's paper with Peter Goers saying that he had trouble with retirement because he doesn't have enough to occupy him. And I thought, well, you know, those of us here that are retired are very well occupied. There's lots of things you can do. And that's sort of a sad indictment. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Going without or sacrificing to help others is a fool's game, according to some people. We work for our success. Let's enjoy it. We're entitled to it. We're going to have a great time. And we know that happens a lot in society. And I suppose none of these things are exactly wrong, but if they're the motivators, and if they, in fact, don't allow room for the altruism and the compassion, it's a real pity. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. It doesn't matter what I read or see or write online, or think or view or say, I can do as I like, regardless of how it may distort my thinking and damage my relationships. And you think of pornography and violence, child abuse, all the stuff available on online and in books, and it does distort our thinking. And if that's the stuff they're reading all the time, they think that's normal. And it's just the diametrically opposite, being pure in heart with God. And then blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Peace is an illusion, an unattainable dream. Let someone else destroy their life of peace or for peace. I'm too busy enjoying my life. That would be the attitude of a lot of people. And it's really sad. We all want peace, but very few people are prepared to live a life that radiates peace from their own lifestyle. And for most of us, we can't do anything about peace in the world. We can do stuff about peace in our family or peace in our community and things like that. We all have some role to play. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. My counter to that was that being accepted in the crowd is my aim, and it's a very important aim, particularly when you're young. You want to be with the in crowd. Who wants to be different and stand out? And I found that particularly difficult as a young person. I still do sometimes because I don't drink. I get really irritated that people keep offering you drinks when you don't want them. I get really irritated that when they do give you a drink, they don't give it in a nice glass. They give it in some kitchen tumbler that might have had Vegemite in it, that we get discriminated against, and things like that. And that they might seem trite, but I think, how can we encourage people to step out of the in crowd when things we've been doing are subtly implying that it's a bit weird to be out? And then, blessed are you when people insult you. Being accepted in the crowd is important, which I just said. Who wants to be different and stand out? I'll be quick to defend myself if I'm ridiculed for my beliefs and may turn them down a little, or even deny them to be accepted, a bit like Peter in the courtyard when Jesus was being tried. Anyway, many smart scientists, academics and journalists think Jesus' faith in heaven is a fool's game. And they get books and all sorts of theories around that. And yet I'm quite sure that the Bible and its truths will be lasting well beyond what their theories will be. So that's the last bit of on the Beatitudes. But I just want to go through and quickly give a quick run through to the other Beatitudes, the other three verses. So, not three verses, three chapters. Jesus then goes on after the Beatitudes and says, "You are the salt of the earth." And we're familiar with that, but salt has two products, qualities, I suppose, in those days and still does have. It was used for seasoning your food, but it was also used for preserving your food because there was no refrigeration or anything. So he says if a salt loses its saltiness, it's no good for anything. They wouldn't alter the taste of your food or preserving. Then he says, you are the light of the world, and you don't light a lamp and hide it. But we have to remember, and I've mentioned it before here, that we so easily forget what a commodity light was in the old times. No, we switch on lights so easily. We have lights in pens and just about everything. As I've often said, most modern cars will have about 50 lights on the dashboard. There's no problem for us to have lights. But in those days, I often think about getting up in the night with a sick child who's vomiting or diarrhoea in the dark when there was no lights. Life wasn't easy, really. It was very difficult. And, you know, when Jesus was talking about light, it was a really big thing. And then he said, "I came not to abolish but to fulfil." He wasn't abolishing the old law, but fulfilling it. And he went on six times and he said, "You have heard that it is said, and it is said that you should not murder, but I'm telling you to settle matters quickly." He said, "You have heard adultery is not good, but I'm telling you that adultery in your heart is very similar to actual adultery." And he went on then to say a little bit about people who divorce their wife are committing them to adultery. And then he went on, "You've heard said, do not break your oath." And when he mentioned that, he said, "You shouldn't have to make an oath. Just by saying you'll do something, that should be sufficient. You shouldn't have to make an oath." And he talked about an eye for an eye and a tooth for tooth. And we often think, well, that doesn't really fit in with what we thought about. And I think that originally came from the Old Testament stuff. But I think it was probably Dan who gave me another understanding of it. If you had, say, injured someone and broke their leg and they couldn't do what they needed to do, well, you should offer them help till they can. And I guess that's what's happening with me today. I've mucked my leg up yesterday. I've had three people come and offer to shift the wood that we have to get shifted before we go away this week. And people have just volunteered for that. But not because I've injured them or they've injured me, but in this, we forget that in those days, the reciprocal offers of help and support weren't as automatic as they are in our Christian society. But that's another way of looking at the text, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, that it replaces something you might have disadvantaged another person with. And then he talked about loving your neighbour and hating your enemy. And then he says, Be careful not to practice your righteousness or good deeds in front of others. And he goes on to give five when-yous when you are about to pray and fast. Don't make it obvious. When you're giving to the needy, don't make it obvious. When you forgive, settle the matter with people without making a big fuss. When you pray, pray like this. And that's where the Lord's Prayer comes in. That he taught the Lord's Prayer that we all know so well. And then he went on with seven do nots. Do not build up your treasures on earth. Do not worry, eat. Do not worry about what you will eat, wear, how you look. Seek first his kingdom. Do not judge others. Think about the speck in your own eye. And that one hits me hard quite often. If you seek, you will find. And then there's the quote that most people today wouldn't know it comes from the Bible. Do unto others what you want them to do to you. We know that is a linchpin. And he says, ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened. That's another one I heard, I think on the TV or radio the other day. And I thought, they don't know that they're quoting the Bible when they said that. They wouldn't have had a clue. Jesus said, how much more God will provide for us than we provide for our children? We need to enter through the narrow gate. There will be true and there will be false prophets, true and false disciples. Good trees bear good fruits. And then we get the quote that we all know, by their fruits you shall know them. And now I get back to the last verse of the Sermon on the Mount, 24 to 28 verses, I think it is, where he talks about how we build our house. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house and it fell with a great crash. And so how we build our house is very important, and it's not about the actual building as we know. It's very important to build our church and our house on the rocks, metaphorically. That is how Dan has been leading us, and I'm sure our prayer life is important in that. And when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. And I had another thought of the about the house on the rocks, which is sometimes. How do I bring this back to life? Right, that's typical of how we see the house being built on the rocks. We always have the rocks up high, and the sand down low. But life is not always like that. I was thinking just a while ago, there's a series out, it's probably 15 years old, of incredible builds. And one of them is a lighthouse built off Scotland about 100 years ago. They could only build few hours a day on the rocks when the tide was down. And that lighthouse on the rocks with the raging sea around it is still there. It's not just about being high, it's about how strong your foundation is and how firm they are. And I've also looked at the buildings in Dubai and what they have to do to counter the sand that they built on, because that tallest building in the world in Dubai, the Burj Khalifa, is really high. We've been up to the 124th floor there, but it's really high. And I thought also about Summertown, where I grew up. Oh, now I've got to go back onto that. You may recognise that as you're driving down Tregarthen Road towards Summertown, you see the house back there. That's the house my late wife Chris grew up in. It's Tregarthen, the old original Tregarthen family home. That is actually in a gully and it's built on rocks. And not many of the walls are straight, but when Chris was living in it, I don't remember seeing cracks and things. It was just, it was built very basically as people could build in those days. And now it's another one of the Trenordan girls, one of Robert's girls, Dane and Kate and Dane live in it. And if you follow the creek down a bit, the next property you get is to the Schultzes. And we had rocks and stones in our creek, and the soil one side of the creek is quite different from the other side. And up on the high side, where Darren and Joe have their house now, that's quite sandy. We used to plant potatoes and root vegetables there because the potatoes would come away clean and the root veggies would come away easily. So in that case, just here at Summertown, the sand is higher than the rock, you can say. So it's not just that physical illusion, which I think we often have when we think of building your house on the rock. You think if it's on the cliff, it's fine. Well, I think we know some of the cliffs along the coast are not very secure places for houses these days. So, looking back on the do's and the don'ts that Jesus gave, we can only obey them when we rely on God for our strength and wisdom. Just of themselves, they're nearly impossible, and they don't make us Christian anyway. But I think he was giving all those examples and then culminating it with the building your house and your life on the rocks. As an outcome of our faith, they become more natural and certainly more achievable. So Christianity is not about the do's and don'ts, but the do's and don'ts are a result of our faith lived out. Jesus Christ certainly gave good rules to live by, but unless they are faith-based, they are simply that, just good rules for life. He wants our foundations to be in him. And it's really our hearts that he wants. When our hearts are in the right place, our living will be in the right manner, and then God is pleased, and the rest of life will come together. Thank you.